The Sports Desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Monday, April 1st, 2019. It's my official duty to welcome you into episode 76 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. We got a lot to dive into here. I'm officially back. I took a little break. Ohio State, obviously, the season ended last Sunday with a 74-59 loss to Houston in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Buckeyes ended the 2018-2019 season at 20-15 overall, ranked number 45 nationally in KenPom. They did win a NCAA tournament game, won their first round game against Iowa State, and those 4 or 5 days in Tulsa were kind of a blur of just constantly churning out content and stories and podcasts and photos and videos and all kinds of crazy stuff. And then got home on Monday afternoon, woke up Tuesday morning, and took the wife and kids to Washington, D.C. for a quick little trip. So I've been kind of away, but also keeping a little dialed in, because as I learned a couple years ago when I took my first year on the beat and took a quick trip down to Cincinnati to go take my son, who was 1.5 at the time, and we took him down to go to the Newport Aquarium. And I emerged from the aquarium to find that Mickey Mitchell had also transferred from Ohio State. And then over the course of the day, AJ Harris was transferring from Ohio State, which meant 3 in like 4 days, and the world was falling apart. And I learned, if I'm going to go anywhere as soon as the season ends, bring your laptop. So I did. And sure enough, while I was there, as you know by now, late last week, Jaden Ladee, Ohio State freshman, transferred out of the program. So we're going to dive into that. We've got a lot of ground to cover here. And I actually think, even though the season is over, this might be a week where maybe we'll squeeze out 2 podcasts, because I feel like there's a lot of looking back still to be done before we start looking forward. And we have lots of time, obviously, between now and when the next team tips off the season. So there's going to be a lot of time to look forward, and we're going to do a lot of that here in the coming weeks and months. So before we do some of that, I want to reflect back a little bit on what the season was like, and maybe it's just some parting thoughts on what the 2018-2019 Buckeyes were like. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into Jaden Ladee. We're going to get into the Final Four a little bit. And I did a poll earlier today asking Ohio State fans how they feel about Michigan State making the Final Four. So we'll analyze that real quickly. So I say all this to remind you to subscribe, because there'll probably be another podcast coming out here later in the week. And we will be weekly throughout the off season. It gets a little lean from time to time. And maybe I talk a little more about some of my questionable music tastes during the summer months, because we've got some airtime to fill. But there's going to be a lot to dive into. I've got some pretty hopefully fun ideas for the offseason that will carry us through the lean summer months. And there's going to be a lot of recruiting coming up and roster shaping and everything. So as always, I say all that to remind you to please subscribe. You can search for Buckeye Extra on iTunes and Google Play and all the places you find the world's finest podcast. You'll also find us there. So please subscribe, and any comments you would leave, 5-star reviews are very much appreciated. So we've got a lot to get into, but first, check this out. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. Rosati Windows believes the right way to do business is really pretty simple. You have to be honest, you have to have integrity, and you have to care about what the customer is telling you and respond accordingly. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he trains all of his employees on the principle that the customer always comes first. Everyone who works at Rosati Windows cares about what they do and the product they put out, from sales through manufacturing to the installation, and all the way down until when they peel that last piece of film off the window. They are not going to leave your home until everything is right. It's this sort of commitment that Rosati Windows can proudly stand behind a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business. All right, we're back. So first thing, we're going to dive into this the Jaden Ladee transfer. So the news went official on Thursday. I don't think it should come as too much of a surprise to anybody that did watch this Ohio State team this season and watched how things unfolded for Jay. Jay came in as a guy that I think we all expected to play a role this season, probably a little bit more of a role than what he did end up playing. But I think it became fairly clear as the season went on that he's still very raw. And yes, he is incredibly physically gifted. He's a very strong player. You could see how he's able to get to the glass. He's one of the team's most effective rebounders in the limited time that he saw. He got a number of number of foul shots for the limited number of minutes that he played. He got to the line a lot, and some of that's just when you're banging down low, you're going to create some opportunities like that. But he averaged 3 points, 1.2 rebounds, and 26 appearances, including two starts. He averaged 6.6 minutes per appearance and scored 41 of his 77 points from the free throw line, where he shot 74.5%. He was 41 for 55 from the line. So like I said, that's more than half of his points came from the free throw line, which is kind of interesting. Out of high school, he was the number 61 recruit in the ESPN rankings. 24/7 Sports ranked him as the number 5 recruit from Texas, number 21 at his position, and he was number 101 nationally. As a senior from the Kincaid School in Houston, he averaged 27 points, 15 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 blocks. He shot 64% from 2 and 40% from 3. He was a 4-time All-State, All-Conference, and All-Conference Tournament selection. But then when he got to Ohio State, he found himself behind Caleb Wesson. He found himself behind Kyle Young. Early, I believe he found himself behind Micah Potter. And it was going to be a battle to see significant minutes no matter what happened this season. As the year went on, it became more and more clear. I mean, he kind of found his way sort of toward the end of the bench there, where he did not get used an awful lot. He did not play in the final four games of the season. So once Ohio State finished off the regular season, went to the Big Ten tournament for 2 games and the NCAA tournament, he did not play. He had a start early in the season against Samford when Ohio State had Chris Holtman held a 4 players out of his usual starting lineup because they were late to like a pregame shoot-around pregame meeting. So he started against Samford, but he only played 2 minutes in that game. Early on, he had some success he didn't play in the opener against Cincinnati. He played in the home opener against Purdue Fort Wayne. And in 13 minutes, he was 12 of 14 from the line, which is one of the stranger stat lines I think I can recall seeing. He only attempted 2 shots from the field, but he attempted 14 free throws. In 13 minutes, he scored 16 points. He had 12 points 2 games later in a blowout win against South Carolina State, where again, he was 6 of 8 from the line, 3 of 3 from the floor. And he started the Samford game. He didn't play a lot, and he started, you sort of thought that there was going to be an opportunity late in the season, even though he hadn't played a lot, where you were going to see, I guess, sort of, I don't want to say it was going to define what his future role might be or if there would be a future role for him. But when they went to Purdue on March 2nd, and that was, we're coming off the Justin Arnes explosion the previous game at Iowa, and you're coming off the Caleb Wesson suspension. The first game without Caleb, it ended up being far and away Ohio State's worst game of the season, a game that Chris Holtman has said that if there was any game that they didn't come to play, it was clearly that game. They got blown out. Jaden started that game. Tough environment for your first Big Ten start. He went 22 minutes against the Purdue team that we just saw this weekend is clearly one of the best teams in the country. Put together an incredible tournament run. Carson Edwards was a monster. But at Purdue, he played 22 minutes. He was 4-9 from the floor, 8 of 11 from the free throw line. He did score 16 points. A lot of that was sort of in garbage time. That game was well decided early. He's aggressive. He has a good head on his shoulders, a really great family. Has been a really nice kid to interview, but you could see watching him that there was a learning curve there. And Chris Holtman talked about that in the preseason, that sometimes when you're a bigger body, that can create more of a learning curve because there's just more of you that you have to figure out how to get it all pointed in the right direction. And I think we saw Jay struggle with that as the season went on. He had sort of an interesting high school career. I think that it's unfortunate for Jay that he came in with, in my viewpoint, overinflated expectations. I think we expected too much out of him because he was so physical and he was so well put together for a freshman. And I mean, he was the number 61 recruit. He was the highest rated recruit in Ohio State's class, according to the ESPN rankings. But he didn't play in a great high school league. He didn't necessarily play in a great team. They had some coaching changes. I did stories last year. Hopefully you read them before all the freshmen got to campus. I believe they were in late May, where I basically just went in-depth with each one of them about what their careers were like and what kind of players they were going to be at Ohio State. And for each one of them, I wanted to talk to the player and I wanted to talk to the coach and get as much insight as I could into what their makeup was and what kind of players they were. Was never able to get Jay's high school coach on the phone. I was never really able to like honestly get a straight answer either. And it's not unusual when you're covering recruiting, when you're dealing with recruits, sometimes you're not going to get that 17-year-old kid on the phone. That just happens. But generally, you can get the coach because the coach knows that part of his role is to promote his players and it's his job to be accessible and to be sort of a conduit for information in a lot of cases. And so I would say that it's exceedingly rare that the coach is, you can't get a hold of the adult. Normally it's the kid that you can't get a hold of, but I could never get a hold of his high school coach. And I don't know why. That might mean absolutely nothing. Maybe he just doesn't like doing interviews. I have no further insight there. And I'm not trying to like insinuate anything, just that it was odd to me that I could never get his coach on the phone. So I did catch up with Jay before or while we were out in Tulsa in the NCAA tournament, because one of the best things about covering the NCAA tournament is that the locker room is open. You can go talk to anybody for the half an hour that it's open. So, I talked to every player on that roster at least once or twice while we were out in Tulsa, which was, hopefully you enjoyed the content. And I still have some stuff squirreled away that I'm going to start pushing out here over the next couple of days and couple of weeks. But I asked him what he felt he needed to do to get more playing time next season. He said, just keep working on my game, keep getting better in the offseason, keep working, get with coach, see what they want me to do to impact the team and go from there. And I said, well, what specifically does that mean? He said, I can always get bigger, stronger, faster, work on my three ball. I think everything. Working on my game in total, because I'm not the best ever to do it yet, so I've got a lot of room to grow. He was a four-star recruit. He was the first member of the class of 2018 to commit. At the time, he was listed as the number 8 overall prospect from Texas. He chose Ohio State over Texas A&M, and he had a final 8 that consisted of Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, LSU, Houston, Iowa State, California, and UCLA. I did catch up with Houston's Cedric Alley Jr., who was an AAU teammate of Ladiz when he was playing for Houston Hoops. And he told me that they'd been roommates and they discussed their recruitments. And he said, I didn't think he was going to go there, though, meaning Ohio State. I don't know all the schools he was looking at, but I thought he was going to stay somewhere in Houston or in the Texas area. He said, it's a good look for him, though. I don't know where Jay's going to end up. I would wager right now that he's probably going to end up somewhere closer to home. Maybe one of the Texas schools gives him some more of a look or some more looks, but I will miss getting to see him develop, because that's one of the things I always enjoy about college basketball, is seeing these kids get better from year to year. And I think that Jay is obviously going to make a significant impact somewhere. I mean, he's physically gifted. He's just raw. And I think that once things catch up for him, and once he catches up to the speed of the game and starts being able to sort of utilize his talents in the best way possible, then I think there is a very bright future for him. I do think it was a little unfortunate. He's never really designed or intended to be a five man. He had never played the five before. He was short growing up. He had a growth spurt in high school and basically went from being a point guard to being a four man and basically one of the biggest players in his conference. But he would be more comfortable as a three or a four. So I think and it's going to take some growth for him to get to that point to be able to play that at the collegiate level. He's not there yet. I think he could possibly get there. I haven't seen him knock down a lot of jumpers. I know that is something he did in high school. I think that's part of the learning curve as well. It was hard for me to envision him going forward having a lot of success trying to fend off guys like Andre Wesson and honestly Justin Arnes and Musa Diallo, and you start looking ahead to next year and the freshmen that are coming in, EJ Liddell, Alonzo Gaffney. I don't know that it would be very easy for him to find some minutes in that role, which meant he's probably going to have to back up Caleb again. Not exactly his strong suit, so not surprised by the transfer. I do wish him the best going forward and his family the best going forward. All right, so now looking ahead just a little bit, because now obviously Ohio State has another roster spot open for next year after losing Micah Potter and now losing Jaden Ladee. It's unlikely to me that they will fill both of those spots, but they're definitely going to add a big man. So what that means for Ben Roderick from Olentangy Liberty, I don't know. If they were to land him or offer him a scholarship, he might end up being the seventh or eighth guy in the roster in that position group. And I don't know how much they want to overload there when they have a very obvious need at center. So what we do know when you look at what Ohio State needs is they need someone who's going to come in and back up Caleb, because they don't really have a guy for that right now. I mean, Kyle Young did it this season. Occasionally Andre would do it. Occasionally Jaden would do it. But they need another big man. Just another guy who's a natural center. And not only do they need a guy who fits that role, but they need a guy who understands he's going to be coming in to back up Caleb Wesson. And that doesn't mean you just lay down and you're fine with, oh, I'm never going to compete with this guy or push this guy. You obviously would need a guy who's going to come in and raise the level and is going to practice hard and is going to push Caleb every day, because he needs that. But you're most likely not going to find someone who's going to come in and dislodge a two-year starter who I still think his best basketball is ahead of him. So they need someone who's comfortable with coming in and fulfilling that role. So we know one guy that's out there is Ibrahima Diallo. I still struggle with his first name a little bit, but he's a 7-footer who played at prolific prep out in California this past season. He's an unrated recruit. I think he's also incredibly raw, would be my guess. So I don't know how much of a major impact a guy like that could have next season. I think that ideally a player like that would come in redshirt, but Ohio State wouldn't have that luxury. So if there, it seems to be Ohio State and Pitt as the two finalists for Diallo, and I would imagine he would be making an announcement or a decision here in the next couple of weeks. So we'll see, I guess, where that goes. But I mean, that's a guy that, you know, you hope that with his size he can come in and just physically hold down some minutes and help give Caleb a breather here and a breather there. It's interesting to me that Joey Brunk from Butler is transferring, and this is someone that Chris Holtman's obviously well familiar with. He recruited him. He signed him to Butler. They have been on the same roster together, and Joey will graduate and have 2 years remaining, was what I had read, which means that he would immediately become eligible and he would immediately have 2 years of eligibility. And he's a pretty solid player. I should have looked up his stats ahead of time. I didn't, but I'm doing that right now, so bear with me. Last season, we played in 46.2% of Butler's minutes. He was a solid player. So as a sophomore, he averaged 7.6 points, 3.6 rebounds, 1.0 assists, and shot 61.7% from the field. I think that's a guy who could help Ohio State. You would have to wonder if he'd be willing to accept a backup role, if, you know, how comfortable he would be with coming in and being Caleb's backup. So on the surface, that seems like a slam dunk. I also wonder, I mean, I know Chris Holtman is pretty, he's aware of the dynamics in play with him and Butler. Obviously, the Butler fan base was pretty upset when he lost. He heard it from them last year when they met in Portland in the PK80, and that was a really tough thing for him. And I don't think he would want to do anything that would be perceived as being detrimental to Butler in any way, or hurting Butler in any way, or profiting off of Butler. So I don't know. I feel like there might be some more dynamic in play there, but I guess I can't say that for certain, but I could see there being some sensitivity there. So maybe that's a guy that they look at. And I did have to laugh. I looked the NCAA transfer portal, just trying to see like what other options are out there. And Daniel Giddens has his name in the transfer portal, which, I mean, he's one of the guys that transferred out of Ohio State there after his freshman season and has spent the last couple of years at Alabama and hasn't played much. I think he might have been hurt this season a little. There were times when it wasn't even clear if he was on the roster. But yeah, he has not played a lot for Alabama, but he's on the go looking for a new spot. So we'll see where he ends up. But I just thought that was interesting that there's another, when you go down that list, I mean, AJ Harris transferred to New Mexico State and he's still there. Jaquan Lyle, where did he initially go? Well, he's at New Mexico and has missed the year with injury. Daniel Giddens to Alabama and then transferred on. Austin Grandstaff went to Oklahoma and then DePaul. Now I saw he's playing for a community college in Texas. So those guys haven't necessarily stuck around basically anywhere they've gone, for whatever that's worth. So now let's put a bow on the season here a little bit. And I don't want this podcast to run long. I've already been a little too long-winded. But a couple of quick takeaways from this year. First one being that this team turned the ball over way too much. And ultimately that had a lot to do with where the season ended, where it did, and why the season ended the way it did. Ohio State finished number 193 nationally in the offensive turnover percentage, according to KenPom. They were like 93rd, I think, last year, or 87th. But that number's way too low. To put it in contrast, in Thad's final two seasons, they were number 227, actually, in both years. And you just think about how much those teams would just dribble a ball off their foot, or just turn it over on a fast break or in transition, how challenging it was for those teams to just get any consistent offense going. Some parallels with this team, although this team obviously found ways to overcome that and get into the tournament and win a game. But that's a definite takeaway from this season, that this team just turned the ball over way too much and has to get better at that next year. We can definitively say this team was lacking in consistent offensive contributors. Caleb, for the most part, you kind of knew what you were going to get from him, although there was a significant stretch in the middle of the season where you didn't know. But then you go down the list, and CJ played real well for a while, and then he'd have a couple of off games, and then, you know, have a couple of strong games. Then he was hurt. Keyshawn Woods was really important early, was almost lost offensively for about half the season, and then really turned it on late. Dwayne Washington would come off the bench and give you a spark every second game or third game, and then might disappear for a game or two, although he did start to turn it on late. Luther Muhammad looked like he was emerging as a scorer and as a go-to guy. And then just his offense just fell off. You look at the last like 11, 12, 13 games, and it was not happening for him. Kyle Young isn't a guy that you necessarily draw your offense up around, but once he had the injury, you could see that just limited his effectiveness and his ability to find those buckets here and there. So that hurts them. Andre Wesson arguably might have been one of their more consistent scorers. I'm going to look at this in a little more in depth going forward, but I do think that for the most part, you knew that he's going to give you somewhere between 8 to 14 a game, and I think he probably did that. That was one thing you could probably count on with this team. And then from there, it just kind of gets a little muddled. So something they definitely need for next season, you need some of these guys to emerge as those consistent scoring threats. Maybe some of the freshmen can help with that too. Keyshawn Woods playing like he did late would have made a significant difference in this season, and I think that's pretty obvious when you look at how he played down the stretch and how much the team looked to him and how much he really took that on his shoulders. I mean, this team doesn't make the tournament without him. This team doesn't beat Indiana without him. This team doesn't almost pull off that miraculous comeback against Wisconsin without him. This team doesn't beat Iowa State without him. He played at an incredibly high level late. I do think it caught up to him in the Houston game, and you can see that wasn't his type of game. Houston was too quick, too long, too athletic, created a lot of problems for Ohio State and specifically for Keyshawn. But it was good to see him end his career the way that he did, because it was pretty, I felt like I kind of wrote him off midway through the season. That was probably unfair on my part, but what we were seeing kind of led me to believe that it wasn't going to click for him, but it definitely did late. I have to give him a lot of credit for that. And yeah, that ended up being a great way for him to end his collegiate career. The injuries really played a factor with this team, and hopefully that's something that in the future, you know, maybe that's mitigated a little bit as Holtman continues to build the roster. I mean, this was still a very limited roster, but you know, you would hope that one or two injuries wouldn't submarine a season. I mean, just look at Michigan State this year and what they're doing. But you know, CJ injuring his ankle and then his shoulder late significantly impacted him and really, really hurt Ohio State. Kyle Young's injury really hurt them because of the different ways he can really help them be physical and versatile. They really had to manage his minutes, almost the second half of the season, and that impacted them at both ends of the court. You need guys healthy. I think we're going to see a really interesting Kyle Young next season because he will be fully healthy. Presumably he's just resting right now. I mean, that's the only thing that would make that injury better, is just to let it heal, and the offseason will allow him to do that. So we'll see what he can do next year, but I do think his injury, it basically prevented Ohio State from playing him at the four, where I mean, his only minutes came to back up Caleb, and that's not really a strong suit, and it just that complicated a lot of things for them. It is worth remembering as we talk about these freshmen where these guys were rated, because I had someone pose a question to me about other freshmen in the NCAA tournament who are playing at such a high level going in the tournament, how some of Ohio State's freshmen really seem to hit the wall. And I said, well, why do Ohio State's freshmen hit the wall while these guys are out playing really well in the tournament? And I would counter with two things. One, that those freshmen are better than Ohio State's freshmen, and that they were probably surrounded by better pieces. And I think that is an important factor, because these freshmen had to carry significant loads in a lot of ways. And it's worth remembering where they were rated. So I just want to throw these rankings out there. In the 27sports.com composite rankings, Luther Muhammad was the number 79 recruit nationally. Jaden Ledeen was 103. Dwayne Washington was 168. And Justin Arns was 249. Now, I'm going to have to go back and pull some comparisons and see who were rated in those ranges in previous recruiting classes and how their careers panned out. But it's worth maybe tempering some of those thoughts that this was a very solid, very good recruiting class, but this was always going to be a recruiting class of four-year guys, presuming that they didn't transfer and that you didn't lose anybody like that. But these guys are going to, I would presume, get better year by year, and they're going to build on things, and they're going to be, when you talk about getting old and staying old, this is going to be the class that's really going to help Ohio State do that. And so expect better things from them next year, but also recognize what they're dealing with and where they were a little bit limited this season. And I'll conclude with this, that in all, before the season, Chris Holtman said that his second year at a program is always the most challenging. Just that you've already kind of put your footprint in, now you've got to really sort of establish things. In a lot of ways, you know, that first year, you're just kind of trying to piece it together and get through the season and start getting things rolling. And that second year is when all that kind of comes together. And it can be a challenge. And this season was a challenge for Ohio State. I think that Chris Holtmann will go back and really examine those that five-game losing streak in January and how much that really sort of submarined so many of the good things that Ohio State had going for it. And some of the struggles that they had, some of the games that they shouldn't have lost. I mean, they shouldn't have lost at Northwestern. I mean, no matter how you want to cut it, that's a game they shouldn't have lost. And honestly, I know Rutgers was a better team, but they should have won at Rutgers. Like, that's a tough loss. And you can kind of go down the list. There are some losses that they definitely did not want to take. Ultimately, the fact that he got this team into the tournament and won a game, I know Rob Aller and I kind of went back and forth on this in the last podcast, so I don't need to go into it again, but I do think that that is a pretty ringing endorsement of where the program is headed, that this team did make the tournament, this team did win a game in the tournament, and now they bring in a really strong recruiting class for next season. And we'll have, like I said, plenty of time to dive into that in the next, I don't know, 30 podcasts. I guess we'll see, but there's a lot of time between now and when all those guys get to the class or get to Ohio State. So I did throw out a Twitter poll earlier today just asking Ohio State fans what their feelings are on Michigan State making the Final Four, because I've actually gotten some interesting pushback from that and from my family members who are Ohio State fans, and they're not necessarily thrilled about that. And I've said I think it's good for the Big Ten. So a little back and forth with my dad, my sister, my brother, and thought, well, I'll throw it out there on Twitter. I said, Buckeyes fans, what are your feelings on Michigan State making the Final Four? So I threw that out this morning. It was only like a three-hour poll. Got almost 500 votes. And the options were yay Big Ten, boo all things Michigan, or ambivalent. And the overwhelming majority was yay Big Ten. 62% of you felt that way. 29% of you were ambivalent. And 9% of you said boo all things Michigan, which kind of made me laugh. So it seems like the majority of you are kind of seeing this from the same point that I am, where it's obviously good for the Big Ten. I sort of feel like Michigan State is a team of destiny at this point, to get through Duke the way that they did and to play the way they have, despite the injuries they've dealt with and the guys that they lost from last year. I think it's a pretty incredible run overall for Michigan State. I hope you've enjoyed watching this tournament. It's been the first two rounds were not all that enjoyable or all that exciting. There was just a lot of chalk and not a lot in the way of even exciting games. But now that all the teams that were blowing each other out or blowing teams out started to play each other, it got to be a lot more exciting. I hope you've enjoyed it. I have to give a shout out to our bracket challenge leader, Colin Ginnin, who had three of the Final Four, right? He had Michigan State, Virginia, and Auburn. So he's currently winning, and he has Virginia winning the national championship. I'm sitting in 13th place right now, and I can go no higher. I had six of the Elite Eight correct, but I had zero of the Final Four. So I was close. And I'm sure this will go down as one of my better bracket challenge finishes, but not doing great. My son, my four-year-old, is actually doing pretty well. He's, I think, 30th or in the top 30, and he's not getting any higher either. He's had nobody making a run. I mean, I think he didn't have anybody in the Elite Eight, but he's holding steady, and he will not finish last. So shout out to my four-year-old Liam for having a pretty solid bracket for someone who has barely watched the sport or knows what he's doing. So, and as far as my suspect musical choices, I just want to throw out, I am enjoying the new Jenny Lewis album, On the Line. I picked that up when I was out in Tulsa, which does not have a very good record store scene. I was very disappointed in that. I did pick that up, and I did find a Frank Turner CD I didn't have, so I've been getting into that a little bit. I did not see Smash Mouth. As I was riding into town Wednesday afternoon, I saw that Smash Mouth was playing Tulsa on Saturday night, and I tweeted how if Ohio State wins on Friday, they can stick around to see Smash Mouth on Saturday, and had a surprisingly large number of replies of people just like chiming in on that or quoting Smash Mouth or whatever. And then I'd completely forgotten about it after the Iowa State win until like Saturday morning when I woke up and had a bunch of tweets about it. They're like, oh, you can all go see Smash Mouth. I was like, we can go see Smash Mouth. And then I looked, and it wasn't free like I had assumed. It was like $25, and I was to heck with that, and I was not going to pay $25 to see Smash Mouth. But had they been free, yes, I would have gone to see Smash Mouth rock out All-Star on Saturday night in Tulsa, but I didn't. I'm going to go buy the new Amanda Palmer record when I get out of here. We are 2 weeks until Record Store Day, so get your list ready. I'm getting pretty excited about that. So you can probably expect another podcast at the end of the week. We'll start looking ahead at as far as what Ohio State has going for it now and what needs to happen in the coming weeks and months minutes before they start the season with Cincinnati at home next season. So until then, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardy@dispatch.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Patrick, the Podfather, for sitting in and listening to me and occasionally editing out a few times in this podcast where I sort of lost my train of thought or couldn't find a statistic. So hopefully this sounds a little better than it did live. Glad to be back, and we're looking forward to diving into this offseason here. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.